Esme?
Yes, Githa?
It's not that I'm complaining or anything.
Yes,
but why isn't it me who's being the posh opera patroniser?
Because you're as common as muck, Githa.
Oh. Right. Nanny subjected this statement to some thought, and couldn't see any point of inaccuracy that would sway a jury. Fair enough.
It's not as though I like this.
Shall I do Madam's feet?
Said the manicurist. She stared at Granny's boots and wondered if it might be necessary to use a hammer. I got to admit, it's a nice hairstyle, said Nanny.
Madam has marvellous hair,
said the hairdresser.
What is the secret?
You've got to make sure there's no newts in the water, said Granny.
She looked at her reflection in the mirror over the washbasin, and went to look away, and then sneaked another glance. Her lips pursed. She said. At the other end, the manicurist had succeeded in getting Granny's boots and socks off. Much to her amazement, there was revealed, instead of the corned and bunioned monstrosities she'd been expecting, a pair of perfect feet. She didn't know where to start, because there was nowhere to begin. But this manicure was costing $20, and in those circumstances you damn well find something to do. Nanny sat beside their pile of packages and tried to work everything out on a scrap of paper. She didn't have Granny's gift for numbers. They tended to writhe under her gaze and add themselves up wrong. Esme, I reckon we've spent probably more than $1,000 so far, and that's not including hiring the coach, and we haven't paid Mrs. Palm for the room.
You said nothing was too much trouble to help a Lunkra girl, said Granny.
But I didn't say nothing was too much money, thought Nanny, and then scolded herself for thinking like that. But she was definitely feeling a little lighter in the underwear regions. There seemed to be a general consensus among the artisans of beauty that they'd done what they could. Granny swiveled the chair around.
What do you think?
She said. Nanny Ogg stared. She'd seen many strange things in her life, some of them twice. She'd seen elves and walking stones and the shoeing of a unicorn. She'd had a farmhouse dropped on her head, but she'd never seen Granny Weatherwax in rouge. All her normal expletives of shock and surprise fused instantly, and she found herself resorting to an ancient curse belonging to her grandmother.
Well, I'll be mogadored, she said.
Madam has extremely good skin,
said the cosmetics lady.
I know, said Granny. Can't seem to do anything about it.
I'll be mogadored, said Nanny again.
Powder and paint, said Granny. Just another kind of mask. Oh, well,
she gave the hairdresser a dreadful smile.
How much do we owe you, she said.
$30, said the hairdresser. That is,
give the man $30, and another $20 to make up for his trouble, said Granny, clutching at her head.
$50? You could buy a shop for...
Githa!
Oh, all right. Excuse me, I'm just going to the bank. She turned away demurely, raised the hem of her skirt, twang, twing, twang, twang, and turned back with a handful of coins. There you go, my good
sir, she said, sourly.
There was a coach waiting outside. It was the best Granny had been able to hire with Nanny's money. A footman held open the door as Nanny helped her friend aboard.
"We'll go straight to Mrs. Palm's so's I can change," said Granny as they pulled away, "and then to the Opera House. We ain't got much time."
"Are you all right?"
"Never felt better," Granny patted her hair. "Githa Ogg, you wouldn't be a witch if you couldn't jump to conclusions, right?"
Nanny nodded. "Oh, yes." There was no shame in it. Sometimes there wasn't time to do anything else but take a flying leap. Sometimes you had to trust to experience and intuition and general awareness and take a running jump. Nanny herself could clear quite a tall conclusion from a standing start.
So I've no doubt at all that there's some kind of idea floating around in your mind about this ghost.
Well, sort of an idea, yes.
A name, perhaps?
Nanny shifted uncomfortably, and not only because of the money bags under her skirt. I've got to admit, something crossed my mind. A kind of feeling. I mean, you never can tell. Granny nodded.
Yes, it's all neat, isn't it? It's a lie.
You said last night you saw the whole thing.
It's still a lie. Like the lie about masks.
What lie about masks?
The way people say they hide faces.
They do hide faces, said Nanny Ogg.
Only the one on the outside.
No one took much notice of Agnes. The stage was being set for the new performance tonight. The orchestra were rehearsing. The ballerinas had been herded into their practice room. In various other rooms, people were singing at cross purposes. But no one seemed to want her to do anything. I'm just a wandering voice, she thought. She climbed the stairs to her room and sat on the bed. The curtains were still drawn, and in the gloom the strange roses glowed. She had rescued them from the bin because they were beautiful, but in a way she'd have been happier if they weren't there. Then she could have believed she'd imagined the whole thing. There was no sound from Christine's room. Telling herself that it was really her room anyway, and Christine had just been allowed to borrow it, Agnes went in. It was a mess. Christine had got up, got dressed, either that or a thorough but over-enthusiastic burglar had gone through every drawer in the place, and gone. The bouquets that Agnes had put into whatever receptacles she could find last night were where she had left them. The others were where she had left them too, and they were already dying. She caught herself wondering where she could find some jars and pots for them, and hated herself for it. It was as bad as saying poot. You might as well paint welcome on yourself and lie down on the doorstep of the universe. It was no fun at all, having a wonderful personality. Oh, and good hair. And then she went and found pots for them anyway. The mirror dominated the room. It seemed to grow a little larger each time she looked at it. All right, she had to know, didn't she? Heart pounding, she felt around the edges of it. There was a little raised area that might have looked like part of the frame, but as her fingers moved across it, there was a click, and the mirror swung inwards a fraction of an inch. When she pushed at it, it moved. She breathed out and stepped in. "It's disgusting," said Salzella. "It's pandering to the most depraved taste." Mr. Bucket shrugged. "It's not as though we're putting good chance of seeing someone throttled on stage on the posters," he said. "But news has got around. People like drama." "You mean the watch didn't want us to shut down?" "No, they just said we should mount guards like last night and they'd take steps." "Steps to the nearest place of safety, no doubt." "I don't like it any more than you do, but it's gone too far. We need the watch now. Anyway, there'd be a riot if we closed. Ankh Morpork has always enjoyed excitement. We're completely sold out. The show must go on." "Oh, yes," said Salzella nastily. "Would you like me to slit a few throats in the second act, just so no one feels disappointed?" "Of course not," said Bucket. "We don't want any deaths. But..." The but hung in the air like the late Dr. Undershaft. Salzella threw up his hands. "Anyway, I believe we are past the worst," said Mr. Bucket. "I hope so," said Salzella. "Where's Signor Basilica?" said Bucket. "Mrs. Plinge is showing him his dressing room."
"Mrs. Plinge hasn't been murdered?"
"No, no one has been found dead so far today," said Salzella. "That is good news." "Yes, and it must be, at least 12:10, said Salzella with an irony that Bucket quite failed to notice. "I will go and fetch him up so that we can have lunch, shall I? It must be a good half an hour since he had a snack." Bucket nodded. After the director had gone, he surreptitiously checked his desk drawers again. There was no letter. Perhaps it was over. Perhaps it was true what they were saying about the late doctor. Someone knocked at the door 4 times. Only one person could achieve 4 knocks without any rhythm whatsoever.
Come in, Walter.
Walter Plinge stumbled into the room.
"There's a lady," he said. "She's to see Mr. Bucket."
Nanny Ogg poked her head around the door.
"Cooey," she said. "It's only me."
"It's, Mrs. Ogg, isn't it?" said Mr. Bucket. There was something slightly worrying about the woman. He didn't recall her name on the list of employees. On the other hand, she was clearly around the place. She wasn't dead, and she made a decent cup of tea. So was it his worry if she wasn't getting paid?
"Good gracious, I'm not the lady," said Nanny Ogg. "I'm as common as muck me, on the highest authority. No, she's waiting down in the foyer. I thought I'd better nip round here and warn you."
Warn me? Warn me about what?
I don't have any other appointments this morning. Who is this lady?" "Have you ever heard of Lady Esmeralda Weatherwax?"
No.
"Should I?" "Famous patron of the opera. Conservatories all over the place," said Nanny. "Pots of money, too."
Really? But I'm due to, Bucket looked out of the window. There was a coach and 4 horses outside. It had so much rococo ornamentation on it that it was surprising it ever managed to move.
"Well, I,
he began again, "it is really very incon..."
"She ain't the sort of person who likes to be kept waiting," said Nanny, with absolute honesty.
And then, because Granny had been getting on her nerves all morning, and the initial embarrassment at Mrs. Palm's still rankled, and there was a streak of mischief in Nanny a mile wide, she added,
"They say she was a famous courtesan in her younger days. They say she didn't like to be kept waiting then either. Retired now, of course. So they say."
"You know, I visited most of the major opera houses, and I never heard the name," mused Bucket.
"Ah, I heard she likes to keep her donations secret," said Nanny.
Mr. Bucket's mental compass once again swung around to point due money.
"You'd better show her up," he said. "I could perhaps give her a few minutes."
"No one ever gave Lady Esmeralda less than half an hour," said Nanny, and gave Bucket a wink.
"I'll go and fetch her, shall I?"
She bustled away, towing Walter behind her. Mr. Bucket stared after her. Then, after a moment's thought, he got up and checked the set of his moustache in the mirror over the fireplace. He heard the door open and turned with his finest smile in place. It faded only slightly at the sight of Salzella, ushering the impressive bulk of Basilica in front of him. The little manager and interpreter fussed along beside him like a tugboat.
Signor Basilica," said Bucket. "I trust the dressing rooms are to your satisfaction?"
Basilica gave him a blank smile while the interpreter spoke in Brindisian and then replied,
"Signor Basilica says they are fine, but the larder isn't big enough," he said.
"Ah," said Bucket, and then stopped when no one else laughed. In fact," he said hurriedly, "Signor Basilica will, I'm sure, be very happy to hear that our kitchens have made a special effort to..."
There was another knock at the door. He hurried across and opened it. Granny Weatherwax stood there, but not for long. She pushed him aside and swept into the room. There was a choking noise from Enrico Basilica.
"Which one of you is Bucket?" she demanded.
"Me."
Granny removed a glove and extended her hand.
"So sorry," she said. "I am not used to important people opening their own doors. I am Esmeralda Weatherwax."
"How charming. I've heard so much about you," lied Bucket. "Pray, let me introduce you. No doubt you know Signor Basilica?"
"Of course," said Granny, looking Henry Slug in the eye. "I'm sure Signor Basilica recalls the many happy times we've had in other opera houses whose names I can't quite remember at the moment."
Henry grimaced a smile and said something to the interpreter.
"That is astonishing," said the interpreter. "Signor Basilica has just said how fondly he recalls meeting you many times before at opera houses that have just slipped his mind at present."
Henry kissed Granny's hand and looked up at her with pleading in his eyes.
"My word," thought Bucket, "that look he's giving her. I wonder if they ever..."
And this is Mr. Salzella, our director of music," he said, remembering himself.
"Honoured," said Salzella, giving Granny a firm handshake and looking her squarely in the eye. She nodded.
"And what's the first thing you'd take out of a burning house, Mr. Salzella?" she inquired.
He smiled politely. "What would you like me to take, madam?"
She nodded thoughtfully and let go of his hand.
"May I get you a drink?" said Bucket.
"A small sherry," said Granny.
Salzella sidled up to Bucket as he was pouring the drink.
"Who the hell is she?"
"Apparently she's a rolling in money," whispered Bucket, "and very keen on opera."
"Never heard of her."
"Well, Signor Basilica has, and that's good enough for me. Make yourself pleasant to them, will you, while I try to sort out lunch."
He pulled open the door and tripped over Nanny Ogg.
"Sorry," said Nanny, standing up and giving him a cheerful grin. "These doorknobs are a bugger to polish, aren't they?"
Mrs. Ogg. "Ogg, could you run along to the kitchens and tell Mrs. Clamp there will be another one for lunch, please?"
"Right you are."
Nanny bustled away. Bucket nodded approvingly. What a reliable old lady, he thought. It wasn't exactly a secret. When the room had been divided, a space had been left between the walls. At the far end, it opened onto a staircase, a perfectly ordinary staircase, which even had some grubby daylight via a dirt-encrusted window. Agnes was vaguely disappointed. She had expected, well, a real secret passage, perhaps with a few torches flickering secretly in rather valuable secret wrought-iron holders. But the staircase had just been walled off from the rest of the place at some time. It wasn't secret. It had merely been forgotten. There were cobwebs in the corners. The cocoons of extinct flies hung down from the ceiling. The air smelled of long-dead birds. But there was a clear track through the dust. Someone had used the stairs several times. She hesitated between up and down, and headed up. That was no great journey. After one more flight, it ended at a trapdoor that wasn't even bolted. She pushed at it, and then blinked in the unaccustomed light. Wind caught at her hair. A pigeon stared at her, and flew away as she poked her head into the fresh air. The door had opened out onto the opera house's roof, just one more item in a forest of skylights and air shafts. She went back inside and headed downwards, and became aware, as she did so, of the voices. The old stairs hadn't been totally forgotten. Someone had at least seen their usefulness as an air shaft. Voices filtered up. There were scales, distant music, snatches of conversation. As she went down, she passed through layers of noise like a very carefully made sundae of sound. Grebo sat on top of the kitchen cupboard and watched the performance with interest.
"Use the ladle, why don't you?" said a scene shifter.
"It won't reach, Walter!"
"Yes, Mrs. Clamp."
"Give me that broom."
"Yes, Mrs. Clamp."
Grebo looked up at the high ceiling, to which was affixed a sort of thin, ten-pointed star. In the middle of it was a pair of very frightened eyes.
"Plunge it into boiling water," said Mrs. Clamp. "That's what it said in the cookbook. It never said, watch out, it'll grip the sides of the pot and spring straight up in the air."
She flailed around with the broom handle. The squid shrank back.
"And that pasta's all gone wrong," she muttered. "I've had it grilling for hours, and it's still hard as nails. The wretched stuff."
"Cooey, it's only me,"
said Nanny Ogg, poking her head around the door. And such was the all-embracing nature of her personality that even those who didn't know who she was took this on trust.
"Having a bit of trouble, are you?"
She surveyed the scene, including the ceiling. There was a smell of burning pasta in the air.
"Ah," she said. "This would be the special lunch for Signor Basilica, would it?"
"It was meant to be," said the cook, still making ineffectual swipes. "Blasted thing won't come down, though."
Other pots were simmering on the long iron range. Nanny nodded towards them. "What's everyone else having?" she said.
"Mutton and cluty dumplings with slum pie," said the cook.
"Ah, good honest food,"
said Nanny, speaking of wall-to-wall suet oiled with lard.
"And there's supposed to be jammy devils for pudding, and I've been so tied up with this wretched thing I haven't even made a start."
Nanny carefully took the broom out of the cook's hands.
"Tell you what," she said, "you make enough dumplings and slum pie for 5 people, and I'll help by knocking up a quick pudding. How about that?"
"Well, that's a very handsome offer, Mrs.
Ogg.
The jam's in the jar, but..."
"Oh, I won't bother about jam," said Nanny. She looked at the spice rack, grinned, and then stepped behind a table for modesty. Twing, twang, twong, twang.
"Got any chocolate?" she said, producing a slim volume. "I've got a recipe right here that might be fun."
She licked her thumb and opened the book at page 53. Chocolate delight with special secret sauce.
Yes, thought Nanny, that would be fun.
If people wanted to go around teaching people lessons, other people should remember that those people knew a thing or two about people. Scraps of conversation floated out of the walls as Agnes wound her secret way down the forgotten stairs. It was thrilling. No one was saying anything important. There were no convenient guilty secrets. There were just the sounds of people getting through the day. But they were secret sounds. It was wrong to listen, of course. Agnes had been brought up in the knowledge that a lot of things were wrong. It was wrong to listen at doors, to look people directly in the eye, to talk out of turn, to answer back, to put yourself forward. But behind the walls, she could be the Perdita she'd always wanted to be. Perdita didn't care about anything. Perdita got things done. Perdita could wear anything she wanted. Perdita ex nit, mistress of the darkness, Magdalene of cool, could listen in to other people's lives and never, ever have to have a wonderful personality. Agnes knew she should go back up to her room. Whatever lay in the increasingly shadowy depths was probably something she ought not to find. Perdita continued downwards. Agnes went along for the ride. The pre-luncheon drinks were going quite well, Mr. Bucket thought. Everyone was making polite conversation, and absolutely no one had been killed up to the present moment. And it had been very gratifying to see the tears of gratitude in Signor Basilica's eyes when he was told that the cook was preparing a special Brindisian meal just for him. He seemed quite overcome. It was reassuring that he knew Lady Esmeralda. There was something about the woman that left Mr. Bucket terribly perplexed. He was finding it a little difficult to converse with her. As a conversational gambit, "Hello, I understand you have a lot of money, can I have some, please?" lacked, he felt, a certain subtlety.
madam, he ventured, what brings you to our, city?
I thought perhaps I could come and spend some money, said Granny. Got rather a lot of it, you know. Keep having to change banks because they get filled up.
Somewhere in Bucket's tortured brain, part of his mind went whoopee and clicked its heels.
I'm sure if there's, anything I can do, he murmured.
As a matter of fact, they're his, said Granny. I was thinking of...
A gong banged.
Ah, said Mr. Bucket. Luncheon is served.
He extended his arm to Granny, who gave it an odd look before remembering who she was, and taking it. There was a small, exclusive dining room off his office. It contained a table set for five, and looking rather fetching in a waitress's lacy bonnet, Nanny Ogg. She bobbed a curtsy. Enrico Basilica made a tiny strangling noise at the back of his throat.
"Excuse me, there's been a bit of a problem," said Nanny.
"Who's dead?" said Bucket.
"Oh, no one's dead," said Nanny. "It's the dinner. It's still alive and hanging on to the ceiling. And the pasta's gone all black, see? I said to Mrs. Clamp, I said, it may be foreign, but I don't reckon it should be crunchy."
"This is terrible. What a way to treat an honoured guest," said Bucket.
He turned to the interpreter.
"Please assure Signor Basilica that we will send out for fresh pasta straight away. What were we having, Mrs. Ogg?"
"Roast mutton with cloutey dumplings," said Nanny.
Behind the face of Signor Basilica, the throat of Henry Slug made another little growling sound.
"And there's some nice slum pie with a knob of butter," Nanny went on.
Bucket looked around, puzzled.
"Is there a dog somewhere in here?" he said.
"Well, I, for one, don't believe in pandering to singers," said Granny Weatherwax. "Fancy food, indeed. I never heard the like. Why not give him mutton with the rest of us?"
"Oh, Lady Esmeralda, that's hardly a way to treat..."
Bucket began. Enrico's elbow nudged his interpreter, with the special nudge of a man who could see cloutey dumplings vanishing into the long grass if he weren't careful. He rumbled out a very pointed sentence.
"Signor Basilica says he would be more than happy to taste the indigenous food of Ankh-Morpork," said the interpreter.
"No, we really can't," Bucket tried again.
"In fact, Signor Basilica insists that he tries the indigenous food of Ankh-Morpork," said the interpreter.
"Is it right? See," said Basilica. "Good," said Granny, "and give him some beer while you're about it."
She gave the tenor's stomach a playful poke, losing her finger down to the second joint.
"Why, in a day or two, I expect you could practically turn him into a native."
The wooden stairs gave way to stone. Perdita said, "He'll have a vast cave somewhere under the opera house. There will be hundreds of candles casting an exciting yet romantic light over the, yes, the lake. And there will be a dinner table shining with crystal glass and silverware. And of course he will have, yes, a huge organ." Agnes blushed hotly in the darkness. "On which, that is to say, he will play in a virtuoso style many operatic classics." Agnes said, "It'll be damp. There'll be rats."
"Another cloutey dumpling, senior," said Nanny Ogg. "Take two while you're about it."
It was an education watching Enrico Basilica eat. It wasn't as though he gobbled his food, but he did eat continuously, like a man who intends to go on doing it all day on industrial lines, his napkin tucked neatly into his collar. The fork was loaded while the current consignment was being thoroughly masticated, so that the actual time between mouthfuls was as small as possible. Even Nanny, no stranger to a metabolism going for the burn, was impressed. Enrico Basilica ate like a man freed at last from the tyranny of tomatoes with everything. "I'll order another mint sauce tanker, shall I?" she said. Mr. Bucket turned to Granny Weatherwax.
"You were saying that you might be inclined to patronise our opera house," he murmured.
"Oh, yes," said Granny. "Is Signor Basilica going to sing tonight?"
"I hope so," muttered Salzella. "That or explode."
"Then I shall definitely want to be there," said Granny. "A little more lamb here, my good woman."
"Yes, ma'am," said Nanny Ogg, making a face at the back of Granny's head.
"Seats for tonight are in fact," Bucket began.
"A box would do me," said Granny. "I'm not fussy."
"In fact, even the box is a..."
"How about box 8? I've heard as box 8 is always hempty."
Bucket's knife rattled on his plate.
"Box 8. Box 8. Well, you see, we don't...
I was thinking of donating a little something," said Granny.
"But box 8, you see, although technically unsold, $2,000 was what I had in mind," said Granny. "Oh, dear me, your waitress has let her dumplings go all over the place. It's so difficult to get reliable and polite staff these days, ain't it?"
Salzella and Bucket stared at one another across the table. Then Bucket said,
"Excuse me, my lady, I must just have a brief discussion with my director of music."
The two men hurried to the far end of the room where they began to argue in whispers.
$2,000, hissed Nanny, watching them.
"It might not be enough," said Granny. "They're both looking very red in the face."
"Yes, but $2,000?
It's only money."
"Yes, but it's only my money. Not only your money," Nanny pointed out.
"We witches have always held everything in common, you know that," said Granny.
"Well, yes," said Nanny, and once again cut to the heart of the socio-political debate. "It's easy to hold everything in common when no one's got anything."
"Why, Githa Og," said Granny, "I thought you despised riches."
"Right, so I'd like to get the chance to despise them up close.
But I knows you, Githa Og, money'd spoil you."
"I'd just like the chance to prove that it wouldn't, that's all I'm saying."
"Hush, they're coming back."
Mr. Bucket approached, smiled uneasily, and sat down. he began.
It has to be box 8, does it? Only we could perhaps persuade someone in one of the other..."
"Wouldn't hear of it," said Granny. "I've heard that there's no one ever seen in box 8.
"It's laughable, I know, but there are some old theatrical traditions associated with box 8. Absolute rubbish, of course. But..."
He left the butt hanging there, hopefully. It froze in the face of Granny's stare.
"You see, it's haunted," he mumbled.
"Oh, lawks," said Nanny Ogg, vaguely remembering to stay in character. "Another vat of slumpy, Signor Basilica, and how about another quart of beer?"
said the tenor encouragingly, taking time out from his eating to point a fork at his empty mug. Granny went on staring.
"Excuse me," said Bucket again.
He and Salzella went into another huddle, out of which came sounds like,
"But $2,000, that's a lot of shoes."
Bucket surfaced again. His face was grey. Granny's stare could do that to people.
Because of the danger, which of course doesn't exist, we, that is the management, feel it incumbent on us to insist, that is, politely request, that if you do enter box 8, you do so in company with a man." He ducked slightly.
"A man?" said Granny.
For protection," said Bucket, in a little voice.
"Although who'd protect him, we really couldn't say," said Salzella, under his breath.
We thought perhaps we were one of the staff," Bucket mumbled.
"Hey, I'm quite capable of finding my own man, should the need arise," said Granny, in a voice with snow on it.
Bucket's polite reply died in his throat when he saw just behind Lady Esmeralda Mrs. Ogg grinning like a full moon.
"Anyone for pudding?" she said.
She held a big bowl on a tray. There seemed to be a heat haze over it.
"My word," he said. "That looks delicious."
Enrico Basilica looked over the top of his food with the expression of a man who has had the amazing privilege of going to heaven while still alive.
Mmm. Mmm.